This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio talking to you about realharmony.org. The profanation of marriage is gaining legs within our culture with the homosexual marriage issue. This is, in fact, church, a gospel issue. We must be salt, a preservative. We have to be light on this issue of homosexual marriage, and we do that at realharmony.org.
This is Joy Temby with Apologia Radio, and you guys, it is so important that you pray for a burden for the people in the homosexual community. Then go to realharmony.org and check out the resources we provide to equip Christians on this issue.
This is the Ministry Bear. Here's the issue. The culture has a universal symbol that recognizes homosexual gay marriage. It's an equal sign. You see it everywhere. Until now, the Christian community has not had a symbol that you look at and say, that's harmonious, real, biblical marriage. Go to realharmony.org. Buy a sticker. They're $3 a piece. Get your church to buy and buy the truckloads. We have a goal of selling 1 million of them and getting this out to the culture. Church, jump on it. Realharmony.org.
I would say if the authorities didn't want us involved in the public square, they ought not to have crucified Jesus in the public square.
Use humanistic principles.
Well, I would say
the same idea.
I would say
same
that. I would say, what's the problem with stardust bumping into stardust?
In the cosmic picture, no, there's no problem. In the cosmic picture, it won't matter.
No, Mr. President, you are not protecting reproductive freedom. You are authorizing the destruction of freedom for 1 million little human beings every year.
I'm sorry, my friends, but I am tired of seeing Jesus presented as a weak beggar. He is a powerful Savior, and the gospel is not a suggestion, it is a command.
Reverend Mola, don't you sympathize with that?
I sympathize with every single human heart wishing to know the one true and living God, but I believe there's only one way that that can happen, through Jesus Christ, and the gospel is about repenting of sin, not celebrating it.
Right now, you're on the threshold of an amazing adventure. We will explore the spiritual abyss. You have not experienced this before. You're gonna love it.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to Apologia Radio. Get us at apologiaradio.com. It's one of your hosts, Jeff Durbin, right here, pastor at Apologia Church in Tempe, east of Guadalupe, and rural in Tempe. We meet right now at Gethsemane Lutheran Church. We'd love to have you join us. You can join us Sunday evenings at 5:30. You can go to apologiaradio.com, get the past episodes. Also, you can go to iTunes, of course, and subscribe to our delicious podcast. Get them for free, of course. And I want to send everyone over right now as we've begun the movement, realharmony.org. And I want to rejoice. Do we have like an applause sound, Pastor Luke?
Yeah, but I don't have it ready.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll just go ahead and give him a little golf clap right there. Okay. Realharmony.org is live and up, and we have stickers. That's right. So here's what we're going to have you guys do. As you go to realharmony.org to join us in the movement to get the gospel into the same-sex marriage debate, which is what it's all about, getting the gospel into this debate, we want you to get the stickers, and if you would, get them, put them in your car, take a picture of it without your license plate. Take a picture of it. Please don't do that. And put it up on our page, Real Harmony, on Facebook. And put those pictures up, get them out. Again, the whole goal of realharmony.org is to take the discussion of the same-sex debate out of the arena of mere partisan political platforms and bring it back to where it needs to rest for us as Christians, and that is proclaiming the good news of God's grace and redemption in Christ to the same-sex attracted community. Please join with us. Get some stickers for you, your church. Let your pastor know what's going on, and let's get that in motion. And I want to introduce you, of course, to the rest of the team here at Apologia Radio, and that is Pastor Luke Pearson. What's up, Pastor Luke?
What's going on?
How you doing today, man?
I'm good.
No clips? Nothing for an introduction?
No.
Say how wonderful you are. Nothing?
I know.
It's a cool shirt, man. It's a Star Wars shirt.
Yeah, it is.
It's a Star Wars shirt.
It is a Star Wars shirt.
It is. And there are people who are fans of Apologia Radio that are also Star Wars fans.
Yes.
Backpack Radio. They really love us.
Yeah.
Did you see
the wicked thing they did. Did you see it?
Wickedly funny, yes.
Okay, I'm going to admit, I was dying laughing. I was cackling laughing. Did you see it, Joy?
Yeah.
By the way, that's Joy Temby.
Hey there.
She's our other host. We call her the girl. And did you see it, Joy? You
mm-hmm.
saw it. Yeah. It was ridiculous. It was evil and it was mean-spirited. As soon as we posted the last episode with our little healthy, godly, amazing rivalry with Backpack Radio, Vocab Malone went to a despicable low. And that is the it was almost like, I think a couple hours after I posted it, he posted up on his blog, like vocabmaloneblogspot.com or something like
yeah.
that. I don't know, somewhere. It's out there. He posted a thing, and he had a picture of Nicolas Cage with a huge elongated forehead with a bird on his head. And he said that it was me. It was one of the hosts, Pastor Johnny Cage from Apologia Radio. And it had a picture of Nicolas Cage with a bird on his head. And it said, "Your argument is invalid. My hair is a bird." Like, that's just wrong. It's mean-spirited.
You know what? I just checked, though, and congratulations to Backpack Radio. They now have gone up 60 likes since our episode aired.
And that's just since Saturday.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing.
Congrats. You guys, you still got about 700 to catch up to us. But
yeah. And we
you're gaining some speed.
We broke the 1,100 mark as of this morning.
Yes.
Nice.
So praise God for that. And in saying that, let me also just tell our listeners how much you mean to us. I want to thank you guys so much. And I mean this with all of my heart. We get comments from you guys all the time. You'll send me messages. I get messages all day, every day from our listeners, the fans of the show, supporters, telling us how you guys are praying for us. And just your encouraging words mean so much to us. I want to let you know, even if you send one and I don't necessarily get back to you, I have so many that come in. I do read them, and I am very, very grateful for your love, for your prayers, for your support. When you guys leave encouraging comments on the page, believe me, we see those, and we are so thrilled by them, and we're just thankful. We genuinely are thankful that you guys are praying for us, that you love us, you want to encourage us. Also, there's been times where you guys have left questions on the radio page. Excuse me. You left questions on the radio page. And, please talk about this on the show, talk about that. Want to let you guys know, if we don't get to it yet, we're going to hopefully try to get to a lot of those questions as we move along in the show. I was thinking, guys, when I was doing Redemption Radio before. And if you haven't listened to that podcast, go to it. There is a ton of great episodes there. It's redemptionradio.podbean.com. When Luke and I were deciding, okay, we're going to do this, what are we going to do? We knew we couldn't just do what we want to do content-wise in just an hour, which is what Redemption Radio was, which mm-hmm. is what also Backpack yes. Radio is. And it just seems like it's so fast-paced, you can't get enough done. And so we decided to go for a two-hour show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm realizing now that we're doing 2 hours, like we need like a three-hour show with all the content we want to get to. And so, again, we are grateful. And I want to especially thank all of our supporters. If you're out there and you have supported us, you've donated money to help encourage us and move this movement forward to get the gospel into the culture, we want to tell you how grateful we are for you. And also want to thank our base of supporters that have committed to a $50 a month donation to help Apologia Radio. We want to tell you how grateful we are. This show just would not be possible without the support of our fans, our followers, our listeners. Believe me, what you're listening to right now is as a result of God's grace in our lives, and the means by which that was brought to us was your prayers, your faithful giving, and your support of us. So I just wanted to give that to you as a real heartfelt thank you very, very much for all you guys do for us. All right, guys. Pastor Luke, we got some comments, right? I think you wanted to talk about some comments or something?
Actually, it's a conversation I was having with a guy that's been on the show. His name is Peter, and he hit us up and was asking about Reformed theology and the doctrines of grace and stuff. So I sent him the famous link from Dr. White, where it's like just anything and everything you wanted to know biblically, like verses and all that for Reformed theology. So I sent that to him. So
I haven't seen that. There's a link for just verses.
Oh yeah, I think it was a blog of his, or it was a letter, maybe one of his like open letters responding to somebody or something. And it's like, it's amazing. Like in one webpage to really be able to just get good, solid answers. Anyway, so I sent that to him and just said, "Hey, check this out." Cause trying to have that conversation through a Facebook message is rather difficult. And so I just said, "Hey, check this out." Anyway, so he hit me up. This is, June 21st, actually. So I've been wanting to do this for a while. I just keep forgetting. So he hit me up then, and he said, "Dear Apologia, it's been about 2 weeks since you guys and girls sent me a link to an article by James White. I had questions about Reformed theology and decided to take an objective so far as I could, look at the theology for myself. I am now done looking through all the scripture, looking through the cross references, references in the margins of my Bible. I am now in need of a few more pens.
Yeah.
I wanted to thank you all, first of all, for taking the time to respond to me. It wasn't until I listened to your podcast with Cy Ten Brugge and Kate that I began a marvelous theological journey.
Right on. I
purchased How to Enter the Fool and had my mind blown. I have been deeply committed to apologetics, so much so I have pursued a degree in philosophy for nearly 3 years now, and I have not, and I now realize the way that I have studied, perfected, and applied is simply unbiblical. I started practicing presuppositional apologetics, and by God's providence, a young man in my church asked me to mentor him in apologetics so he can be equipped when he goes off to college. We've been going through a lot of material, most of which has come from you all together, and it has been formative. I wanted you all to know that once the Bible was put back at the center of my apologetics, the Bible was finally put in the center of my life. I literally have been neglecting I literally have been neglecting my college work so that I can read my Bible, and I have never had that hunger before. As someone who works in a church and someone called to be a minister of Christ, I wanted to make sure I knew where I stood on major theological issues. And that is where I contacted you. After doing a lot of reading and listening to a conversation Jeff had with a Mormon where free will was brought up and where he said about bringing our presuppositions to the next or to the text floored me. I decided that instead of letting my presuppositions influence my reading of scripture, I would let God's word become my presuppositions. As such, I have changed my view on eschatology, God's sovereignty, man's depravity, origins, the church, and the law. It has been a wild ride, and I pray that it never stops. I have written a lot here, and I want to respect your time, but I wanted you all to know that what you're doing is changing lives, impacting the world, and honoring Jesus. I admire the passion that you have and the unashamed way you engage the culture.
Wow.
I gotta have more cowbell, baby.
That is awesome. That is wonderful.
Yeah, I was really encouraged to hear that, so...
That's an incredible
thing.
Yeah. I mean, just to think of the impact the show has, I get those kind of comments a lot. And I want to let you know that we don't glory in that at all in ourselves. We don't think that it really has anything to do with us. It's God's grace that has put us here in this position where we can have this wonderful show that goes international. And just to hear your stories of a lot of you guys, that the heavy emphasis for me is just what kind of was said before all of that. It's not so much just like, oh, I changed my view in this position or that position or this position, because that's not really what I'm fighting for. I'm not saying, like, I really want to make you post-millennial, Calvinistic, presuppositionalist.
Yeah.
It's really essentially to say, want to make, like, God supreme, Christ as the source and foundation of all wisdom and knowledge, and that we come to the Word of God as our starting point, and our obedience to God comes from that point.
Right.
And I think, obviously, I mean, of course, I'm not denying this, I think, obviously, from my perspective, that that'll lead you into all those areas. But I think the real important thing to get there is just the foundation of having a love for the Word of God, submitting to Him as Lord, and then your life being transformed. See, that's what sounds so delicious to me, is that your life and your mind and your walk with Christ is being transformed as a result of listening to this radio program. And believe me, we delight in God in that, and we take no glory in ourselves for that. So we're just grateful. Thank you so very much, Peter.
Yes.
God bless you, man. Thanks so much,
Peter.
Brother. So we'll be right back with Joy Timmy the Girl, Luke Pearson the Bear, and me, your host, Jeff Durbin, Kung Fu Kitty. I took it. Meow, meow. I'll be right back. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
Welcome back. Some of you know. That's Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Dubstep, right?
Yes, sir.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, do you guys know that I was interviewed by Agent Schrader? Hank Schrader.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Dean Norris.
Yeah.
On the History Channel. If you go to our Apologia Church YouTube account, You can check out the clip of the interview I did on the History Channel for this show called The Stoned Ages, where Agent Hank Schrader, the DEA agent brother of, what? I can't even, I just dropped his name.
Brother-in-law.
Walter White. Interviewed me on the Christian approach to drug and alcohol addiction. You can check it out at our YouTube page, Apologia Church on YouTube. So we are back in the studio today in the toasty, toasty Phoenix, Arizona sun. Boy, it is getting hot. What was it last week? It was like 120.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think in some places this weekend. Now, that is warm. I don't care who you are. That's warm. I don't care where you're at. That is warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is where you learn to use your skills and not touch anything in the car, right?
Well, I was going to say, ever since I got my new car that has air conditioning, because my old car didn't have air conditioning.
Yeah.
I've become such a little, like, spoiled baby.
Like, yes.
I used to get out of my car, and it was actually cooler outside of my car. Because,
right,
you know, like, you get super sweaty, and then you get out, and it feels nice out in the Arizona sun. But now, like I said, sometimes I get so cold in my car that I, like, turn it down.
Oh,
so
that's
now,
awesome.
Like, now I get out, and I'm like, ugh, this is horrible. But I never did that before, ever.
That's right.
I was like, this isn't quite so bad, but now
yeah,
it's bad.
Yeah. You learn to hang with it, right? My first summer in Arizona was in 1996. I had a little pickup truck, Toyota pickup truck with no air conditioning, and it was a nightmare. And I also had long hair then.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, long hair. What's up? I had long hair, and so it would, like, I had the windows down, the heat would dry my hair, so it would start flying out of the little ponytail thing, all the flapping over my face, and it was just a miserable experience.
Yeah.
Awful.
Like a wet dog.
That's right. That's right. So, hey, we're back. ApologiaRadio.com. Get us. Go to RealHarmony.org. Get your stickers. Join a movement to get the gospel into the same-sex marriage debate. Wanted to touch just for a moment, and this will be probably the last time we do it because it's all that's necessary. We had a couple of weeks ago an atheist call into the show by the name of William. And let me just kind of set you up for what happened. He came to the Facebook page, and he made quite an extraordinary claim. The claim that he made was that when Christians say that, hey, atheists are borrowing from what only makes sense with our presuppositions, they're borrowing the biblical worldview to make sense of their own, he said, no, it's reversed. You're borrowing from naturalistic assumptions to make sense of your worldview. Which I said, that's an interesting claim to make.
I was very interested to hear what he had to say about
that. Yeah, not many people will make that claim, by the way. There's a lot of atheists that will despise Christianity, hate God and everything else, but they won't make that claim. They won't have it as a reversible authority claim that you're borrowing from naturalistic assumptions. Now, I want to explain why this is so important. When we say the atheist is borrowing from our worldview, what we're saying is they say one thing about the world, but if you look at how they're operating and moving in the world, they are living according to our presuppositions, mm-hmm, acting like there are immaterial, abstract entities that are universal and necessary, laws of logic, things like this, acting as though the universe can be clocked, that we can depend on the uniformity in nature, that induction holds. And when we say you're borrowing from our worldview, we're saying that you're clearly dependent upon God to do what you're doing, and that militates against what you're saying is your professed belief about the world. Now, when he comes on and he says, no, actually, you're borrowing from naturalistic assumptions, do you see why that's so strange for us? Because what do Christians acknowledge fundamentally about the world? That it's guided, governed, and purposed.
Right.
Okay. What else? That we are not simply matter in motion, that there are immaterial aspects to our reality and to our own being, right?
Exactly.
That universals and unchanging things make sense because of the universal and unchanging God. And so when he says you're borrowing from naturalistic assumptions, it immediately should cause some flags to come up. Like, well, wait a second. Our most fundamental beliefs about reality and how we operate in the world are supernaturalistic. Not just naturalistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he says you're borrowing from naturalism, notice immediately the conflict. Our fundamental assertion is that there are immaterial entities out there. Our fundamental assertion is that the universe is guided and governed. And so when someone says, well, I can show you that you're borrowing from naturalistic assumptions, that's a raw deal on his part. Because you have to fundamentally ignore everything we're saying in order to make that claim. Mm-hmm. And so he came on the show and he's perturbed about the fact that I kept keeping his feet to the fire, and I would not let him change the subject. We told him he can come on the show. He was allowed to be on the show to defend the claim that it's a reversible authority claim. We're borrowing from naturalistic assumptions. Okay. When he came on the show, he didn't want to stay there. He didn't want to hold to that point. He didn't want to even ultimately prove it that we're borrowing from a worldview of naturalism denying supernaturalism, that we're borrowing from a worldview that says it's unguided and ungoverned, which is what naturalism is, no personal order, no God, right. and to do so. So, you know, he comes on, and of course I kept stopping him to say, stay on point, stay on point. Anybody can go back and listen to that show to hear how it went. And ultimately, he failed to prove his point, okay? And he's perturbed by that. He says, you were interrupting me. The point was is I didn't want to let him change the subject, and so I wasn't going to allow him to do that. So now I want to go into – he made a video response, and this is really ultimately the last time we need to deal with this because of what he admitted in this video response. But before I even go into it, can I just say something? If William is listening, William, we care for you. For us, this is not a matter of one-upmanship, and I think I even wrote that to you in a message. This is not a matter of us just holding on to pride and wanting to be right. This is not a matter of us caring very deeply about being on a radio program and not wanting to be proven wrong. You see, in my worldview, it's okay for me to be corrected because I love truth. So if I am wrong, I'm happy to admit that I'm wrong. And I want to be corrected because Christians claim to love the one who is the embodiment of truth. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes to the Father but by me. Mm-hmm. And so with that, as a Christian, this is not for us a mere sparring match. Joy, Luke, and I care very deeply for those that are lost. And William, for us, this is not a matter of trying to win a match. This is a matter of us trying to fight for your soul. We care very deeply for you. And for us, our main objective here is to point you to your borrowed capital. And the fact that you are clearly displaying that you are made in God's image and that you know the God that we're talking about, but you're at war with him. This is not a matter of intellect for you, William. It's not a matter of a lack of evidence. This is clearly a matter for you that was the same that's true for us before Christ, is that you're a sinner against the king. You know him. And your problem is a suppression of truth. It's that you live in the world dependent upon this God, all the while you deny him with your profession of atheism. And that's our whole objective, is to point you to the God of grace and redemption and forgiveness so that you turn from sin to this God, to this Savior, to this Messiah, to trust in him for salvation and for forgiveness. He died, was buried, and rose again, and he calls you to turn from your sin, to trust in him. That is our hope for you. Mm. This is not a matter of intellectual combat alone. And with that said, we do want to deal with your video you put up. We were only able to deal with a few moments of it last time because we were at the ending of the show, but we want to make sure we give you the respect due to you as an image bearer of God to give you this final response to what you said in your video. We hope you guys stay tuned and listen as we dissect a little bit of what William said on his video, ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
Like a bullet train. Moving like the speed of sound. Feet can't keep on the ground. Can't stay in one place. Keep moving like a bullet train.
What's up? Welcome back to Apologia Radio. Get us at ApologiaRadio.com. Please go to our iTunes subscription. Subscribe to it. Get the back episodes. Join the movement. We need you guys. We need your prayers. We need your support in every way possible. Go to ApologiaRadio.com. And if you feel led to give, please donate to the work and ministry of Apologia Church to get the gospel around the world. That's the goal of this show. Pastor Luke, you wanted to say something before I got started with the video.
Yeah, I've been privy to the conversation with William and have, you know, been a part of that at some point. And it's quite clear that William's sole desire in this is to prove you wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, he said that I'm just going to keep making videos about you. And are you going to respond to him? Are you going to watch him? Like, that's his thing, is he just wants to prove you wrong.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to just jump off what you were saying. Like, dude, William, no offense. We got bigger fish to fry. Like, we don't have hours to pour into this. And he's literally spent hours and hours and hours dialoguing with people on her Facebook. And every time he makes a response, it's a minimum of like 10 paragraphs. Like, there's no way we have the time to put into it that you do, William. And so I just wanted to jump off what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, ultimately we care about your soul and we want to call you to repentance, and we don't have time to just banter back and forth.
And it's not a matter of not caring or having concern
right.
for you. It's a matter of if we, and don't take this the wrong way, I got to just put it into context here. If we spent our time dealing with every internet troll, basement internet thug, you know, that was out there, not necessarily William, that's you, saying that we get these kinds of things all the time, we would have no life whatsoever, apart from just ministry, no time with family, no time with friends, none of those things. And so this will be the last time we ultimately need to respond because of what you said in the video. I want to say this now. William is perturbed also and upset about the fact that I will constantly be pointing him back to his feet.
Yeah,
in other words, what he's standing on. An atheist hate this. Mm-hmm. They hate it when a Christian will say, wait a minute, you're acting inconsistently with what you believe about yourself. You're acting inconsistently with that. Like, for instance, on the show, the last show, you can listen to that episode, I said, you believe we evolved from simpler biological organisms into fish to apes to us, so from fish to philosophers. And he basically admitted that, yes, he holds to that worldview of a common ancestry that we all go back and we move from fish to us. Now, what's amazing is this is what drives me nuts, guys, is that as a Christian, when I say, well, you believe you're bipedal protoplasm, or you believe you evolved from the fish or simpler biological organisms, they'll say, oh, you're being too simplistic and stop that. And they don't like to talk about that. But what's amazing is that if you do it with a British accent, apparently that changes things. Like, if I were to say the same thing, you're bipedal protoplasm, you evolved from the fish, and I did it like Dawkins, maybe they'll change their
mind. People often ask me, if we're descended from chimpanzees, how come there are still chimpanzees? Well, we're not descended from chimpanzees. We're both descended from a common ancestor who lived there about 6 million years ago. That common ancestor then produced two branches, one of which went to us humans, and one of which went to chimpanzees, branching further to produce bonobos and common chimpanzees. We are all cousins. We are not descended from chimpanzees. More distantly related are gorillas. They share a common ancestor with both us and chimpanzees. That's the common ancestor between gorillas and humans and chimps. So humans and chimps are a natural group which are related to gorillas, cousins of gorillas, and all of those animals, which are all African apes. The African apes are gorillas, humans, bonobos, and chimpanzees. All the African apes have a common ancestor with orangutans. That's the common ancestor with orangutans. Those are all the great apes. So the great apes are all cousins. Within the great apes, the African apes are closer cousins. Within the African apes, humans, bonobos, and chimps are closer cousins still.
So there you go. So when Dawkins says it, he sounds so delicious and so British.
This is what his accent screams.
You better watch out, you fool. Hey, fool. Hey, fool.
Understand something, that when I point that out to you, William, as a Christian, I'm trying to be faithful with your commitments. You're not. And when we have this debate, it's an amazing, amazing thing. When you say we're African apes, descended from simpler biological organisms, unguided processes to bring us here today, here's what I want to do. I want to stand in your presuppositions for a second and say very clearly that having a debate as an African ape is something akin to...
I don't know what we're yelling about! Loud noises!
It's just noises. What are we yelling about? African ape.
Apology Radio will be right back.
The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. Leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. but our.
Welcome back to ApologiaRadio.com. Get us there. Go to our Facebook page. Like it on Facebook. Apologia Radio just broke the 1,100 likes mark. I'm in the studio with Joy Temby, Luke Pearson, right here at KPXQ Faith Talk, coming at you from Phoenix, Arizona, dealing a little more with William. I want to set some foundations. William on the radio program said that for the purposes of the radio program, he was a naturalistic materialist. A naturalist believes that all exists is the natural, the material universe and realm, and so that's where he comes from. There is no purposed governance and order to the universe. And so I wanted to say also, I oftentimes punch at the feet of the atheist when I say, you believe we evolved from simpler biological organisms to fish to apes to us. And William hates it when I do that. He does not like it when I keep reminding him of what he believes about himself. Now, by the way, William, I reject that deplorably low way you think of yourself. I reject it. I believe you're an image bearer of God. You have beauty. You are worthy of my respect. You have dignity and value that is inherent because you are a reflection of the infinitely valuable God. I reject the very deplorable and low way that you think of yourself. And if you should deny that atheists do believe this about themselves, and by the way, William acknowledged that he accepts Darwinian evolution. Okay? This is Dawkins at a lecture.
Over here. Thank you.
It's fairly easy to imagine how apes can develop into humans, but I don't find it as easy to imagine how bacteria can develop into apes. Could you describe some of the species in between?
Yes. Yeah. The question says it's easy to imagine how apes could evolve into humans, but it's harder to imagine how bacteria could evolve into apes. Well, one very important difference is that the time it took for apes to change into humans is a matter of perhaps 5 million years, whereas the time it took for bacteria to evolve into apes was a matter of thousands of millions of years. So it is a huge difference. And what the human imagination is capable of visualizing gets more and more difficult the longer the time span is that you have to cope with. So the intermediates that you might expect to see would be, well, starting with bacteria, an early intermediate would be some kind of protozoan. That's to say, a single-celled animal, much more complicated than a bacterium, because it's a eukaryotic cell, which means that it's actually a kind of society of bacteria. The eukaryotic cell, which is all our cells, and protozoan cells, things like amoebas, are complex societies of bacteria.
Okay, so let me admit that I could be a little more accurate. William, you are a complex society of evolved bacteria. Does that help? Is that better? Am I going to get yelled at again for using Dawkins language? Like, for example, when I say that Dawkins says there is no good, there is no evil, only blind and pitiless indifference with his worldview. And when I say that and someone continues to fight for morality and I say, well, wait a second. Now I'll use a great atheist that shares your worldview. He's consistent in the statement. No good, no evil, only blind and pitiless indifference. Mm-hmm. Is that good? Can I do that? Is it right to try to be accurate with what proponents of a worldview actually say about what their beliefs are? I would hope so. And that's what we're trying to do. Now, it may be I know why it's uncomfortable for an atheist to hear this, because they're image bearers of God.
Yeah.
And they know that they have value and dignity and worth, and that there is purpose and meaning and beauty and truth and goodness. And when you point this out to them, it irritates them because it reminds them of their rebellion against God.
Yeah.
That's the truth. Mm-hmm. It's constantly pointing that out. Do you have something to say about that? Or?
Well, and I also feel like when your beliefs are purely based off of your experiences, and usually that's articles or books written by people who are also going off of their experiences, I feel like things get really convoluted and you feel like, I don't know, I feel like you can come up, you or somebody else can come up with for you a way to, rationalize things. So I think they, I think it's hard to get straight answers sometimes
right.
from atheists because they've kind of created answers in their own little way, but they're kind of complicated. And because of the, I don't know, like you can't, well, I'm this, there's a million kinds of atheists is what I'm learning. Like, they won't even just say like, I'm an atheist anymore. It just gets, there's so much information out there about it. I feel like it just, they feel like that it's a really, really complex answer to everything. Mm-hmm. They don't like the simplicity of the argument that we represent because it's in order to be okay with their ideas, they kind of had to make it more complicated.
Yeah, rationalized.
And not necessarily always them, but like I said, sometimes articles, books, whatever.
Right.
But it's all based off of, you know, just personal experience.
Now, let's never any truth. Yeah,
let's
remind everyone as we enter the discussion. What we're going to listen to now is a video clip of an atheist who is morally indignant with us. He is morally indignant. He accuses us of lying and dishonesty, and he talks about atheist honesty. He talks about things like proofs and logic and things like that. Understand, of course, that William has already admitted that there is no ultimate ought in laws of logic. Okay, he said that on the radio program, and that he does believe, like Dawkins, that we've evolved from simple biological organisms to fish to apes to us. Now, what we're talking to right now, you're going to listen to a person who, according to Dawkins, is a highly evolved humanoid from societies of bacteria. So here, let's listen to the bacteria talk.
Listen, Christian. Don't go into the world scared or unbelieving worldview and you're apologetic.
Well,
you stand on the rock
right.
of God's word and you have certainty. When I set Christ apart as Lord and I start with God in my reasoning and in my thinking, I have absolute certainty about what I'm saying.
That was a clip from me.
You sound weird.
This claim of absolute certainty has become common among presuppositionalists like Jeff Durbin or Cy Ten Bruggenkate. When debating with non-believers, the presuppositionalist will rely on the non-believer's honesty in order to maintain their lie. Someone like Cy will always ask questions like this.
Okay, quick, I got to say it. We did some of this last week, but I want to say this. When you say that it's become common, William, you're late in the debate. Christians have been saying this, and God's people have been claiming certainty and full assurance for thousands and thousands of years since God's revealed himself in his holy word, and specifically when God walked among us and he spoke. So this is not this has not become common. You're just dealing with ancient, orthodox, old school, dark room, lit candles Christianity. That's what we're dealing with. And when you talk about honesty and lying, notice who it's coming from. A person who believes that there is no guidance and governance to the universe. We are evolved from simpler biological organisms to fish to apes to us. That is what your worldview teaches. You may not like it. You may say, but yeah, Jeff, but now we're really complicated and complex, highly evolved protoplasm. We think really well now. We didn't before, but now we do. That doesn't change the fact that that's what you believe about yourself. And there is no basis whatsoever for you to be complaining about lying. Let's assume for a second that we're not. But let's assume for a second that we were lying. Here's my response to you, William. Get ready for it, because it's very, very complex, intellectually rigorous. Just hang on. You may want to get a pencil, guys, to write it down. Here's my response to your claim that we're lying, given your worldview of highly evolved humanoid protoplasm. Ready? So what? So what, William? There's no God, according to you. No justice ahead of us, only sky above us. Don't forget that. There are no moral oughts in your worldview. So there are no problems in your worldview. Now, you may observe what you think are problems, but given your atheism, nothing is a problem. Because, remember, there's no God. You've evolved from complex societies of bacteria, and yet you complain.
Now, earlier I asked you if you could be wrong about everything you claim to know. Could you be wrong about everything you claim to know?
I suppose it's possible.
It's possible.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I could be a brain in a vat somewhere.
You know that you could be a brain in a vat?
I suppose it's possible.
See, the non-believer is willing to admit the epistemic limits to their knowledge. And if they were a brain in a vat or living in a matrix, they would have no way to double check. The brain in a vat scenario is a non-falsifiable claim.
And here we go again, more borrowed capital. Notice, William, our claim to you is that you have no, you can't account for knowledge, period. It's not just about right. an epistemological system of either rationalism or empiricism or whatever it might be. This is us saying to you with your naturalism, you cannot give an account for knowledge, period. Nothing at all. And when you talk about falsifiable claims, you are appealing to things like truth, and you cannot even account for knowledge or justify true belief at all. Because you've even admitted on our show, it's anybody can listen to it. It's available through podcast. Get it on iTunes and subscribe to it. You admitted on the show that you cannot, with your naturalism, provide the preconditions necessary for laws of logic. Now, if you cannot provide the preconditions necessary for laws of logic, then you cannot go running around telling people that they're talking about falsifiable claims and right. knowledge. You've already admitted these things, William.
Meaning it can't be proven false. This is true because any evidence you try to present to prove that what you're experiencing is not simply an illusion could theoretically fit with what the simulation had planned all along.
And I want to point out right now, more borrowed capital. This is very, very important. And William, again, this is for your soul. We care for you. Please listen closely. When you talk about evidence and proof, you are, again, living on borrowed capital. Don't forget your worldview. You need to keep looking at your feet, William, as you make these claims. Evidence and proof? Evidence and proof would require, ready, the reliability of sense perception. Universal, immaterial, unchanging laws of logic. It would require a foundation for knowledge. And ready, and this is super important for evidence and proof, it would require induction. The future will be like the past. When you appeal to evidence and proof, notice something. You are undermining your most basic assertion about reality. You're a naturalistic materialist. At least that's what you said on the show. Well, you said lots of things. You said you were an agnostic. Then you said you were an atheist. Then a lot of different things. Very slippery, by the way. Very slippery. Lovingly, I say this to you, William. Very slippery. But notice you said you're a naturalistic materialist. And here you have a naturalistic materialist who says he can provide no foundations for the preconditions of laws of logic. And you do not believe that there is any personal order or governor to the universe. And yet you're appealing in your... and you're trying to hold to proof and evidence, you're appealing to induction. Because all evidence and proof, in order to prove anything or have evidence, you would have to have the uniformity in nature and that the future will be like the past. In order for us to even continue the discussion, the future would have to be like the past. As a matter of fact, as we're all listening to this show right now, notice something. Every single one of us, the entire time, has been holding to something and you've been doing it without thinking about it. What have you been doing? You've all been assuming the uniformity in nature in everything that I'm saying. You've been assuming it in the holding to laws of logic, and you've been assuming it while you sit there in your chair or you're driving in your car, that nature is uniform. The future will be like the past. William, your appeal to evidence and proof undermines your own presuppositions. You are highly evolved bacteria, from fish to African apes to you. You have no basis to appeal to the uniformity in nature and that the future be like the past. And if you say, well, Jeff, it always has been, you are begging the question. You are living, William, on borrowed capital every moment you breathe, every moment you walk, every moment you speak. You cannot provide the preconditions necessary for induction. In your worldview, you do not know the future will be like the past, and yet you appeal to it. You know God, William. Turn to him for life. We'll be right back. ApologiaRadio.com.
How many books do you know of that address topics of education and welfare, local government, state government, taxation, money and banking, free markets, courts, war and the military, and the executive power? How many books do you know actually talk about these topics from a biblical perspective and set forth all of the issues, ideas, the history, and the hurdles, and the blueprints for the way forward? Hi, I'm Joel McDermott with AmericanVision.org. In Restoring America One County at a Time, I cover all these topics and more, showing you how America was once free, how those freedoms were lost, and giving you an uncompromising biblical approach to get those freedoms back. I focus on practical steps, local solutions, personal sacrifices, and it has a multi-generational vision. So don't just sit around talking about restoring America. Actually do something. And you can start by getting my book, Restoring America, One County at a Time, at AmericanVision.org.
Hard baseline that we bring is always hard. Spraying up your boulevard.
So we're back, finishing up our response to a video to display to the listeners the joy and the boldness you can have when you approach a world of people who were just like us before Christ, rebels against the king, that need him, to know that the Bible says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. Not the intellectual, amazing, thinking person, but the fool says in his heart, there is no God. Romans 1 says that one of the results of fallenness is we exchange God for a lie, that we switch God for idols, and that we profess to be wise, but become fools. And this video is most certainly a display of that kind of foolish thinking apart from God. Luke, you wanted to say something, didn't you?
I'll wait till the till
okay.
You're done
so we'll get
that.
Right back into the video. William, one of the guys that called into our show, an atheist. We love him. We care for him. We're concerned for his soul. Here is some more of his video.
The epistemic problem that all humans face is that we are not all-knowing.
There are no epistemic problems in atheism. There may be what you perceive within in your own subjective experience, your own arbitrary declaration of what is a problem. There are no epistemic problems in atheism with your foundations. We are highly evolved societies of bacteria. Don't you remember this, William? So there are no problems. There's no should-bes. There's just what is. Now, you want more meaning than that, William, and that's because you're an image bearer of God. If you come to Christ, you'd have a foundation of the things that you're even talking about. There can be epistemic problems within a Christian worldview. We can say that that's not true. That's not right. We need to work on that. This doesn't work. This doesn't work. This does. We can talk about epistemic problems within a Christian framework, but you can't. You're an apish humanoid, William.
You're not omniscient, and that we are stuck within our own subjective perceptions of reality. I called into Jeff's radio show to ask him a couple questions, and this is what he said.
The first question is, Jeff, are you omniscient?
Am I omniscient?
Yeah.
Well, of course not.
Okay, no. Well, my second question was, can you escape your own subjectivity?
Can I escape my own subjectivity? Well, in the sense that I'm a personal being, and all of us have different emotions and we have different thought patterns and everything else and belief systems. Of course, everybody has to approach the world in a subjective sense.
What Jeff is admitting here is that...
What's amazing is that in William's videos, he doesn't play any of the parts where I'm actually engaging with him, right? Like actually like having him, pushing on his worldview. He doesn't do that. He wants to just sort of clip me up and doesn't want to give the rest of the story. He doesn't want to talk about the fact that right after this comment, you can listen to the show, guys. Right after this comment, I told him, nope, we're going to put your feet to the fire. Stay on topic. What you called in about is what we're going to talk about. And he didn't want to do that. And so he's chopping it up and everything else. Yeah. But watch this. Here's a problem. Talking about omniscience presupposes what, William? That there is such a thing as knowledge and true knowledge. You've already denied that with your worldview. So when you bring up omniscience, you're skirting the whole issue that we originally wanted you to call in about. And that is, how does your naturalism provide a foundation for knowledge at all?
I was just going to say, he really wasn't being very honest either. And when he said that he called in to ask a couple questions, because that's not why we had him call in at all.
That's right.
Is not omniscient, that he is fallible in his knowledge. And number two, that he's limited to his own subjective perceptions of the world. But if he's claiming absolute certainty.
I did not say that I am limited to my own subjective perception of the world. William, that's a lie. I didn't say that. And for me, it's appropriate to want to fight for something that is true and not a lie. I did not say that. And if you listen to the last episode we did, I did describe the fact that Christians have a way of escape of our own personal preferences and subjectivity. That is, we have the God who is all-knowing, who is personal and has revealed himself. I can escape my own subjectivity, and I have a basis to even talk about things like subjectivity because I believe in sense perception and that it can be reliable because I'm an image bearer of God. My worldview can make sense out of sense perception. Yours can't. And so I am not just limited to my own sense perception, my own subjectivity. I have the word, the rock of the God who is all-knowing.
This poses a problem. Can he prove that the Bible isn't part of the hoax? Does he have a reliable way to double-check his subjective feelings or intuitions?
Sure do. I sure do. Mm-hmm. And what do you think that is? I have the ultimate standard. Yep. I have the ultimate authority himself who has spoken in history and revealed himself. And so the answer is yes. By the way, when you use words, think about this, guys. When you use words like the hoax, it's kind of a dirty word.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, he played a hoax on this person or that person. Mm-hmm. A hoax. Guess what? There's nothing wrong with hoaxes.
Exactly.
For bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Notice the borrowed capital again,
mm-hmm.
as if a hoax would be a problem. What's wrong with fantasies and fairy tales, William? Is there such a thing as truth? Ultimate truth? Objective truth? Should we steer clear of hoaxes? Is that a problem for bacteria? Should bacteria not believe? Ought they not to believe in hoaxes?
I think if he's completely honest, he will be forced to say no.
If he's completely honest. Notice the near puritanical morality you impose on people, William. Are you a Puritan, William? Do you have a white wig and a black robe? Because you would fit in quite well with the Puritans with your moral indignance.
I think if he was
honest, as though highly evolved societies of bacteria have a moral requirement to be honest in engagement.
If Jeff was a brain in a vat or living in a matrix, he could be having illusions of a fictional God.
By the way, you really need to direct this video over to Cy, my brother in Christ, Cy, because I said nothing about brains and vats.
Yeah.
So perhaps your video was a little off course. Maybe you meant to address it to Cy alone, because I didn't bring up any subject of brain and vat. I dare you to try, William. I dare you to try to search through any video, any sermon I've ever given, and find me talking about a brain and a vat scenario. And yet you direct this challenge at me. Interesting.
God, or of revelation equally the same. This is true for any presuppositionalist. Jeff or Cy have no way to step outside of their own subjective perceptions of reality.
I don't? That's interesting. First of all, I have a basis with God as my foundation to talk about perceptions and talk about thought processes and talk about knowledge, true knowledge, justified belief, to appeal to laws of logic, to investigate the world, to believe that the future will be like the past. I have a basis to do this. And yes, I can, in my own perception, be corrected or redirected onto what is a true course through the ultimate foundation and authority, which is God and his revealed word. I do.
In order to double check that what they're experiencing corresponds with what is actually real. At this point, Jeff might try to say that God is omniscient and that God is the one revealing things to him, so therefore he can be certain.
Good.
But this misses the point. Jeff is not omniscient. He is fallible in his knowledge, and he is stuck within his own subjective perceptions and experiences.
Wrong. See, William, what you're missing here is that when you this is more borrowed capital on William's point. More borrowed capital. And look what you're assuming the entire time you talk about my subjective experience. You're assuming something that is much higher than highly evolved societies of bacteria. You're assuming that sense perception can be something that we can actually engage in and rely upon. You're assuming things about the world in this video, William, that just do not comport with your atheism. Talking about looking for knowledge and truth and escaping mere subjectivity, you act as though there's some absolute standard of truth out there. It's amazing, the borrowed capital. And yes, Christians can even talk about sense perception. We could talk about redirected on a course of truth because we have God as our foundation. William, you're, again, like, to quote Dawkins, a highly evolved bacteria society.
Jeff can only be absolutely certain of something external to him if he is omniscient.
That's a non sequitur. It does not logically follow.
So like Jeff said on his radio show, he is not omniscient and he cannot escape his own subjectivity. So If he were to be...
Pause. Now, guys, did I say on the radio program I could not escape my subjectivity?
No.
Did I... There you go. So notice the claim being made is that Christians are lying. And then here William puts a video out. It only has like 80 views, okay? See, it's been up for like 2 weeks. 80 views. He puts a video out accusing Christians of lying, and he just lied on the video.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the challenge. Ready? One, William, if you really truly believe in integrity and that's an important thing, you'll pull this video down because you just lied. I never said I cannot escape my own subjectivity. As a matter of fact, I rigorously denied that in the next episode, and I did not even say it in that one. So, William, you told a lie. It is a lie that's recorded. It is on your YouTube channel, and I ask anyone to cross-check my statements with William's statement to say that I said I could not escape my own subjectivity. I never said that. I never said I could not escape my own subjectivity. I explicitly denied it in the next episode. So, William, you have a choice here. You can, A, believe that integrity is an important thing and pull the video down because you lied. Or B, you can keep it up, and then you'd be consistent, actually, with your own worldview because there are no moral oughts or needs for integrity in your worldview. Either way. Now, if you took it down because of integrity, I would say, look at your feet, William. You're acting like an image bearer of God. And if you don't take it down because you don't really believe integrity matters or that lies count, then I'd say congratulations. You've displayed that all you're arguing right now is to nothing. It's just to the wind and the air because nothing is necessary. Nothing is an ought.
Completely honest. What follows is that there is a possibility that he could be mistaken about his faith and that he has no grounds to make claims of absolute certainty. Just to be clear, this doesn't prove Christianity false or that no God exists, but simply that the presuppositionalist claim of absolute certainty is impossible.
Look at the words like impossible.
Mm-hmm.
He's got things like possible and impossible. He's got all these different concepts that just, to me, seem to be striking a blow at his feet.
Yep.
Where's all this possibility and impossibility and certainty and true knowledge and everything else coming from? It's amazing that we would have someone that believes so little about himself and others that he's an apish humanoid, African ape. It would be throwing all these concepts out. It really, truly is an amazing thing. And so, Joy, do you have anything? We have a few moments left here in the show, but anything you want to throw in as a curveball or anything here?
Well, I just think it's kind of funny that now all the simple statements come out. When we would ask him questions on the show, it was kind of like, well, I'm this, and then weak atheism, you know, all that sort of like convoluted stuff I was talking about. But now we have, he lied. He can't be certain.
Right. Some firm commitments.
Yeah.
Let me remind you of what I think is an important thing.
I don't know what we're yelling about.
Apology Radio will be right back.
Where is my mind? Where is my mind? Where is my mind? Where is my mind? Where is my mind?
Welcome back to ApologyRadio.com. I'm Jeff, that's Joy the Girl, that's Luke the Bear. Has your beard gotten bigger?
I'm assuming it grows on a regular basis.
Yeah, but I mean, like, usually you get it like at a certain level, you don't let it go beyond. It looks like you're actually trying to grow it bigger. Are you trying to get like a belly beard? Are you trying to get a belly beard?
I'm just letting God work his magic.
Speaking of beards, quickly, did you see how many times I got on my page yesterday, this post about beards?
Oh, my gosh. I just got it. We got it again today.
Yeah. I mean, guys, listen, I love you guys. But, like, when you go to my page and you see that it's already posted 16 times, like, I'm good. I've seen it.
Yeah. What was it?
It's a thing about beards. It tells, like, things about a beard.
We literally just got it again.
Again.
The show.
That's amazing.
Okay. Can I tell a quick beard story real quick?
Yes.
Last night at Icon, which is our student ministry.
Awesome.
Joy's
impressed.
Yeah, I was very impressed. Your daughters were there, and I was just messing with them. I was like trying to like hit him in the face with the piece of pizza, and Sissy goes, "I'm gonna shove that in your beard." And I said, "I'll just save it for later." Then and your other daughter, Say, turns to me and goes, "Shave it for later."
And that's totally, that's just totally a say-say.
That is stinking awesome.
I gave her a high five. I was like, well done.
All your kids have like their little individual types of humor, and that's totally a say-say right there.
She
is
quick.
She has quick wit.
Yes.
I don't even know where she gets it. She is fast. She does like this weekend, she did that to me all weekend. This little quick little response is just like a shave it for later. That's incredible. Say-say, I love you. You're awesome. Okay, all right, let's finish up this rest of the video here, guys. William's response, and then after this, we're done. We don't need to respond anymore, and you're going to see why in a moment.
Jeff so nicely demonstrated. The presuppositionalist tactic is to get the non-believer to admit this possibility that they could be a brain in a vat or they could be wrong about everything they think they know, to then accuse them of not being able to know anything. But ironically, the same exact thing applies to presuppositionalists as well. They are in effect pulling the rug out from under their own feet.
Doesn't apply to us. No, William, you may want it to. You may be looking at what is the case that people have epistemological systems and they're trying to work things out logically and they're appealing to uniformity. You may look at what is the case, but you cannot account for it. We can. And we can because we rest on the presuppositional commitment to God, who is the ultimate authority. And when he speaks, we can have absolute certain knowledge because we even have a basis for knowledge in the first place. You don't.
They are undermining their claim of absolute certainty by using this brain in a vat argument against non-belief.
Again, did I ever use a brain in a vat argument?
No.
Okay, interesting that he addresses this thing to me. You should make a separate video addressed to Cy and then engage Cy on it. Cy is my brother in Christ. I love him. And his point is completely valid about knowledge. But again, your video is not directed at me here.
Verse. Another thing I want to add is that Christianity has been a faith-based belief for 2,000 years. If Jeff and Cy have absolute certainty that it's true, why do they need faith? Have they given up faith, or are they just being dishonest?
Oh, amazing. William, let me say this with love and respect to you, gentleness and concern for you. You just misstated at best what Christians believe about faith. Faith is trust in. And everybody has faith. William, you have faith. You do. You have confidence. You said on the radio program, you had, I asked you questions and you said, well, because of this. And I said, well, so then you have faith. He said, well, no, it's not faith. It is. It's trust. You have trust. Now, notice the difference, though, is that your faith in your worldview with no justification, ultimate justification for the preconditions for knowledge or laws of logic or the uniformity in nature, yours is a blind faith. It's a trust in nothing. Ours is a faith and a trust that is rooted in rock solid evidence and truth and everything else. And so everybody has faith. Every position is a faith position. But not every position is a rational or coherent position. Everybody approaches things on faith or trust. That is a necessary element of knowledge. But not every position is a rational or intelligible one. You just ultimately showed your, and let me say this respectfully, ignorance of what the Christian position is on faith.
So the next time someone like Jeff or Cy says something like this to you,
I have absolute certainty about what I'm saying.
You can respond by asking, how can you prove the Bible isn't part of the hoax? Or, by what procedure can you double-check your subjective revelation without relying on your own fallible subjective perceptions?
You are just basically telling yourself a story that allows yourself to believe.
So he plays
that
a clip here.
He's
talking to an atheist.
You don't.
You can't hear it too well on this right now.
You mentioned a moment ago you don't have certainty. Christians,
and I'm talking to atheists about how he has no certainty
about things that God has revealed.
Again, Jeff, no, you can't. You are limited to your own subjective sensory interpretations, and your senses are fallible. You cannot
Look at the borrowed capital again. Sensory interpretations, fallible, as if there was some infallible standard out there. And so this is really important. I'm not locked into that. Now, William, you are, but I am not. My worldview gives me a foundation for knowledge, for laws of logic, for uniformity, for all these different things in the first place. Experience, sensory perception, all those things. I have that with me being an image bearer of God and his word at my feet. Now, it's a problem for you. I admit it. William, it is a problem for the naturalist. It's not a problem for the supernaturalist, the Christian.
Prove that what you think is real is not simply an illusion. and you have no way to reliably double-check your subjective revelation
and here it comes, guys.
Without relying on your own subjective, fallible sense perceptions. The next time a presuppositionalist asks you a question like this...
So you can have no certainty.
That's I said right. you can Are have you no certainty, the atheist says, that's
you
right.
You can respond by saying yes. We are both not omniscient, and we are both certain of it. Therefore, if we're honest, we must admit our uncertainty regarding the external world.
And there you go. If you are honest, we must admit our uncertainty regarding the external world, which means this. Every time William speaks in the future, he should end it with, but I'm not certain. Every video you post, William, to be honest, because you said this, if we are honest, we must admit our uncertainty regarding the external world. Ready? Here's your word. I'm quoting from you. Therefore, if we're honest, we must admit our uncertainty regarding the external world. I'll believe you're honest, William, when before your videos and after your videos, you remind your listeners that you are uncertain about everything you're saying in the external world. As a matter of fact, you can put in parentheses at the end of every title of your video. If you put one up, you can put up, but I'm not really certain about this either. Do you see the point? What did William just do? He did what Van Til said would happen. Van Til used to always talk about the fact, he said, let the unbeliever talk. Mm-hmm. Let him keep talking. Mm-hmm. And he'll eventually hang himself. And William, you just did. Now, my suspicion is that William is not going to stop talking. Mm-hmm. My suspicion is that William will continue to write things on Facebook. He'll continue to produce videos and everything else. And I care for you, William. And so I hope to continue to engage you and I hope to take you to lunch. But my suspicion is he'll keep on going, even though he just said, if he is honest, he must admit his uncertainty regarding the external world, which means after everything you say, William, if you're honest, you should say this, but I'm not certain about that either. And I'm not certain about that either. Everything you say, William, comes with no certainty. And yet, watch this. You'll continue to make certain claims about logic, about truth, about honesty, about lying every time you move and speak in the world. Which means, William, you are displaying you know him, but you're suppressing the truth about him. You can come to Christ for life and for peace. Be right back.
Apology Radio will be right back.
Welcome back to Apologia Radio. This is the Ministry Bear. We're just wrapping up here, dealing with our buddy William from here in Tempe. So this is the last segment we're going to spend on him for reals. I know we said that about four segments already today, but for real, we're gonna end it right now. So I just wanted to follow up and just kind of echo some of the stuff that Jeff was saying. Just because, like I said, with my interaction with William, there's some stuff I've just been brewing in my brain, which William can't account for, that I just wanted to say. So, you know, sorry. There was another clip I found of William that I don't think you knew about.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he left this on my Facebook.
Okay. I'm in a glass case of emotion.
I mean, it's funny, but in all seriousness, like there are some theological points I can make off of that. And, you know, he is very upset. And why is he upset? Because we keep holding his feet to the fire, like Jeff said. I mean, the conversations I've had with him, I've been holding him to immaterial things like logic. And his response has always been, well, I've never said that I can account for that, which is huge. That's a major, major blow to his worldview. And as we've been talking today, I'm picturing William like as... Like Wile E. Coyote in an old Looney Tunes commercial or show, like chasing the Roadrunner. Like he's on like this tall spindle way up in the air, and every time he opens his mouth, he's chipping away at that thing he's standing on, that foundation he's standing on. One of these times, it's going to just come crumbling down. which is what I pray for.
That's what we hope for.
Yeah, that's what I hope
William,
for.
William, we care for you. We love you. Notice we're saying. Notice all that we're saying about you is our concern for you. Of course we're attacking your positions. Know that we're attacking your positions. But we believe we're just like you, sinners before a holy God. We're all in need of the same grace, William.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, basically, like, it's like, William, you know, your response every time when we've said, you know, you can't account for dignity, for logic, for love, anything immaterial like that, your response has been, well, I know I can't account for that, and the burden of proof is on you. That's ridiculous. First of all, we have shown that we can account for it.
Right.
And second, like, the fact that you have no way to account for it completely demolishes your worldview. There's no reason
shows his faith commitments, by the way.
And exactly, that's where I was going to go, is you have to put faith in those things. You have to say, well, I'm assuming I have faith that these things exist,
I don't know, but I believe it.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely. And so that's what I just wanted to say. Like, William, you there's no reason, there's no point for you to even open your mouth until you can come and say, I can account for these things.
And if he says something right back to you right now he's thinking of response to you, right now he's thinking of how he's going to, notice, again, at the end of whatever you want to say back, William, you need to say, but I'm not even certain about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that being said, in your worldview, why are we having this discussion? Why does it matter? Who cares? You're wasting your time.
I don't know what we're yelling about!
As Jeff says, take up bowling or something. You know? No.
Yeah, take up bowling. Yeah. Find something else to do. If I truly wanted to live consistent with his worldview, if I said abandoned Christ, which is an impossibility, for Christ isn't going to lose any of those he saved. But if I were to abandon my foundations and then stand over on Williams, that's what I would think about the world. I would try to be consistent with it. But in trying to be consistent with it, I would be inconsistent with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no need for consistency.
Yeah.
That's a deep thought.
Yes. Deep thoughts with Jeff Durbin.
Okay.
William, you're a super smart dude. You it's clear you know a lot of big words. And I don't say that as like a slap in your face.
No,
like,
he doesn't.
You're very intelligent. You've studied this. The problem is that you're basically just chasing the air. There's no point in what you're trying to accomplish. So I know we got like 1 minute left, but I don't know if Joy, did you want to say anything?
Well, I was just saying that, you know, like Jeff was talking about, just being honest with the whole idea of certainty. And, basically that whole video that I just listened to is full of certain claims, even about, Christians. You have a really subjective view of what Christianity is, right. And it's either what you've experienced or what somebody has told you. So I know that you don't want it to be like this, but let me just encourage you for a moment to know that whatever subjective beliefs you have about who God is or what a true Christian really is, it's not subjective, it's objective, and you're missing out, dude.
Yeah, you're missing out. You can have all the moral indignants when you have a standard of what is holy. We care for you. We love you. And notice this, everybody, if William writes anything to you or makes another video, here's what you can say every time now because of what he admits. But you're not even certain about that, are you, William? If he says, well, neither are you, you could say, well, you're not even certain about what I'm certain about, are you? Not certain, are you? Every single time.
Apology Radio will be right back.
Welcome back to ApologiaRadio.com. Hit me up from 1360 KPXQ Faith Talk in the studios in the hot Arizona sun. My goodness, it's toasty. Do you see that video? Not video, the picture. The Maymay going around. Maymay? Hey, hey. The Maymay going around Facebook. It was the chick from, it was Terminator 2.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like being blown apart by the nuclear thing. It says, what the wind in Arizona feels like. Yeah. And if you haven't been here this time of year, you don't understand how actually true that is. It is hot.
Yes.
man, people say, oh, it's a dry heat. That's a lie. It's a lie straight from the pit of hell, which is what this feels like sometimes. And I'm not complaining. I'm just rejoicing in God, but I'm not going to lie about how it feels. I mean, it is hot when the wind blows. Luke, you said it last time. It feels like someone's blowing a blow dryer on you. That's true.
Yep.
Like
I was thinking the other day, I really right now appreciate whenever Christ talks about hell in the New Testament.
Yeah. You're not the only person that says that. Like, man, this is hot.
Yeah.
All right. So, hey, we're back on Apologia Radio. Hey, we had a question. We had a lot, actually. There was, but that one really, I thought, piqued my curiosity and my interest to say, well, how can we do that on the show? And it was from our boy, Dustin Seegers. What's up, Dustin? If you don't know Dustin Seegers, he's the bomb. Cy and Dustin are good friends. They did a debate together at, I think, UN. See in the past, really good. Dustin is really—he's a hero of mine. He's just a sharp, sharp believer. He loves Jesus. He is faithful. He's committed. He goes out and proclaims the gospel on the street corners, at abortion mills, and everything else. The guy's amazing. We even got a delicious picture together with Dustin at the Reason rally.
Yeah.
I got to meet his wife and his daughter. Dustin, I love you, man. And the question that you—did you have something?
I just want to say something to Dustin.
Okay.
Here.
Your beard is good.
Because now he has a wonderful beard.
Yep.
Yeah, when he didn't have a beard before.
Nope. I think he got that from us. I think
he may have.
We spurred him on.
Good. We're glad.
He dropped the fanny pack.
We're always happy to spread righteousness.
Yeah.
So, hey, the question that he threw out was he wanted us to talk about preterism, or the request. We want to talk about preterism. Now, I want to say, to understand preterism, don't let the word throw you. Don't be freaked out. Like, I don't know what that means. It's just simple. It just means past in fulfillment, okay? And basically, it's in reference to end time stuff. Most people know on this show, we're post-millennialists. We believe in an optimistic view of the future, that Christ is ruling and reigning now, and that he is in the process now putting all his enemies under his feet. He has a kingdom that will reign forever and that will last forever, and that his kingdom will have no end, and that it starts as a mustard seed, grows into a large tree, leaven and lump of dough permeates the entirety of the loaf. Daniel chapter 2 says the kingdom of the Messiah would come during the time of the fourth kingdom, which was Rome. It'd be like a stone, then it would become a mountain that filled the earth. We believe that kingdom came. Christ brought it. He is the king. It's going to be victorious in history. But a lot of times, with a post-millennial hope and vision of the future, you'll notice that many post-millennialists are also what's called partial preterists or preterists. Now, what does that mean? It has a lot to do with how you view New Testament prophecy. And let's say specifically or primarily about the book of Revelation. Revelation, there's a couple different schools of thought you can have about the book of Revelation. You can have what is called idealist. You can have the historicist. You can have the futurist. Or you can have the preterist look at the book of Revelation. Now, number one, the idealist view is sort of like, it's not really fixed or firm. Like, as you read Revelation, it's sort of like the ideal clash between good and evil. Don't, I like how Douglas Wilson puts this. He says, you know, don't expect any real fulfillment here on earth of what's going on in Revelation. It's more of like this cosmic battle between good and evil, idealist, okay? The next school of thought, the historicist, is the person that believes that the book of Revelation is essentially fulfilled throughout history. Again, I'll go to what Douglas Wilson says on this. He says, imagine the historicist seeing Revelation being like a carpet that's rolled out down history, okay? It's in stages, like the seven churches represent seven different stages of church history. Now, the futurist is what's popular today that believe the book of Revelation is primarily future to us, our generation, this generation in the 21st century. The futurist believes Revelation is mostly future to us in our future. Now, the preterist believes that Revelation was primarily fulfilled in the events surrounding the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD in the first century. There are ongoing implications, and there are other things we're still looking forward to, but primarily the preterist will say it's past in fulfillment. So you understand what that means is that, let me just give it to you in a nutshell. Most post-millennialist preterist, partial preterist, full preterism is ultimately heresy. Okay, know that. It's dangerous. I've seen that world, been in that world. I know how dangerous it can be, theologically speaking. So stay far away from that, where the implications really get nasty and dirty. But I want to say that when you look at preterism, biblical preterism, partial preterism, you have to deal with the fact that Jesus taught some stuff. Okay, Paul taught some stuff regarding his coming in judgment on that generation. Now, if you want to know how serious this issue is, You need to know that Bertrand Russell, famous atheist, in his book Why I'm Not a Christian, has one of his primary arguments against Christ as Messiah, that Jesus was wrong about his coming. That Jesus clearly taught a coming in that generation before they all died. And guess what? Bertrand Russell was right. Not right about Jesus being a false prophet, but that Jesus did promise a coming in judgment before they all died. C.S. Lewis, he also wrote a book, wrote an article, and it's called, I think, The World's Last Night. And notice what he says in this article. This is really, really important about the second coming. I must have missed this place here. Okay, here we go. This is what C.S. Lewis says about Christ's coming and judgment and everything else in the generation. He says, but there is worse to come. Say what you like, he's quoting now. We shall be told, quote, the apocalyptic beliefs of the first Christians have been proved to be false. It is clear from the New Testament that they all expected the second coming in their own lifetime. And worse still, they had a reason, and one which you will find very embarrassing. Their master had told them so. He shared and indeed created their delusion. He said in so many words, this generation shall not pass till all these things be done. And Lewis says in this further quotation, he was wrong. He clearly knew no more about the end of the world than anyone else. Now, this is Lewis in this essay, The World's Last Night. It is certainly the most embarrassing verse in the Bible. It is certainly the most embarrassing verse in the Bible. Now, know something, guys. That is a Christian, quote unquote, Christian philosopher talking about Jesus' statements. If you want to know how serious this issue is, listen closely to the fact that Jesus clearly did teach that there was judgment coming in that generation, a judgment coming of Christ. Matthew 3:2, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Matthew 3:7, who warns you to flee from the wrath about to come? Matthew 3:10, the axe is already laid at the root of the trees. Matthew 3:12, the winnowing fork is in his hand. Matthew 10:23, listen closely. You shall not finish going through the cities of Israel until the Son of Man comes. Listen to that again. This is a quote that Sproul brings up in his book, The Last Days According to Jesus. There's no way out of this, guys, and you shouldn't want to be. It's an amazing, glorious fulfillment, actually. You shall not finish going through the cities of Israel until the Son of Man comes. Now, we cannot play games with that. Jesus clearly taught that. They're not going to finish going through the cities of Israel until the Son of Man comes. Matthew 16:27, the Son of Man is about to come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will recompense every man according to his deeds. There are some of those who are standing here who shall not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. And Christians have oftentimes, I think, wrongly tried to say, well, then the transfiguration took place on the mountain. That was like 6 days later. No one died before that. He clearly taught some of them standing there would not taste death before they saw the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Notice Mark 13:30, Jesus says, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. What things? The stars falling from the heavens, the persecution, the famines, the earthquakes, the temple's destruction. Jesus did teach that. But you see, here's the problem. If we take a futuristic interpretation of those verses, then clearly you've got false prophecy to deal with. Because he taught it.
Right.
But it's a wrong-headed view. We're not saying that the ultimate final coming of Christ, the second coming of Christ for resurrection of the just and unjust would take place in that generation. We're saying the coming of the kingdom in full power, that Christ coming in judgment on the covenant breakers in the first century would happen before they all died. And guess what, guys? It did. Within 40 years of Jesus' prophecy that generation would not pass away until all those things took place, within 40 years, the Romans came against Jerusalem. The 3.5-year war of the Romans versus the Jews occurred. They set fire to the temple. The temple was taken apart, stone off of stone. The coming of the kingdom of God was on full display. And the Jews could see with the destruction of all the old covenant order, all the things that were pointing to the old covenant, all the symbols of the old covenant. The Jews could see the destruction of the old covenant, the removal of the things that had been made so that the things that were not made could last forever. The kingdom of God was to come in full power before they all died. Jesus' judgment coming was to take place before they all died. And the book of Revelation, with a partial preterist or consistent biblical preterist interpretation, is primarily about the destruction of the whore, the old city, the old Jerusalem, the unfaithful bride, the whore of Babylon, who's wearing the temple's colors, purple and scarlet, who is drinking the blood of the saints and the martyrs of Jesus, who is riding the seven-headed, ten-horned beast, which represents Rome, and that beast turns on that whore, burns her, makes her desolate, burns her with fire, destroys the whore, and makes way for the bride, the new Jerusalem, to come down out of heaven from God, where God dwells with his people, where the gospel goes out of the new Jerusalem and invites the nations to come for healing and to drink. The book of Revelation is primarily a book that displays God's covenant lawsuit against first century Jerusalem, the destruction of the old city and old Jerusalem to make way for the glorious new Jerusalem. The new heavens and new earth have been brought in, and there is a final fulfillment and consummation of those things, but that is what a preterist would see, is that Jesus promised he was coming in that generation for judgment. He did come. Everything happened exactly as he stated it, and people have a problem real fast with Matthew 24 and Jesus saying the stars will fall from the heavens. They go, well, did that happen? Did those cosmic events happen? Here's the problem. We're reading it like Gentiles. Jesus is quoting from Isaiah about Edom and Egypt, where those same exact terms were used to describe the destruction of a city or a state. Deconstruction hyperbole was used to describe the destruction of Edom, and Jesus is quoting from that, only this time he's quoting from what was used against a pagan city, now against God's holy city, Jerusalem.
Okay, so I do want to talk about some of the alternative views to preterism.
Okay.
Such as that, you know, like you talked, well, you talked about the
idealist,
futurist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, I want to know kind of like where those came from. Obviously they came from somebody who, was reading like a Gentile wanted, I don't know. Does that have something to do with this whole like end of the world?
That's hard to say. It's hard to say because here's one thing that's true about us as Christians. Okay, we all agree on all the essentials. Okay, mm-hmm. And we do agree that Christ is returning and he's coming to bring judgment and resurrection from the dead and everything else. But here's the thing: we've had inconsistency on this issue of eschatology from ultimately after the turn of the second century.
Yeah,
you see Christians arguing Matthew 24 in the first couple centuries as past and fulfillment. They're using it as an apologetic against the Jews. Isn't it amazing?
Mm-hmm.
People today are using Matthew 24, futuristic to us, but early Christians are using it as an apologetic against the Jews, that he did come in judgment and destroyed your city as promised. So there's inconsistency, Joy. There's Christians that throughout the ages have said, like historic premillennialism, that we have a future look for these things of Revelation, and some that have been amill, that look more of a different interpretation. We've been inconsistent. What we need is to come to the scriptures together as Christians on this issue and to be honest with the text, to hold to our principles of sola scriptura. The scriptures alone are the only infallible final rule of faith. So, Joy, I mean, honestly, inconsistency is rampant among Christians throughout the centuries, but you do see also some consistencies in areas like this one. We'll catch you next time. ApologiaRadio.com. Peace out.
Peace.